This is Mike Patton, and I'm running for re-election to the state Senate from the 4th Legislative District, which is primarily the Spokane Valley.
Third term, right, Senator? Or is it your fourth?
Well, I was elected in a special election in 2011, which is only for 1 year. And then I was reelected for the full 4-year terms in 2012 and 2016. So I guess it's a fourth time to be elected, but one was only for a year.
You served in the state house for a while, too, did you not?
Right. I served in the state house from January of 1981 till late March of 1995, when the Spokane County Commissioners appointed me a Spokane County District Court Judge, which I had that job for just about 12 years.
So you've been in the public eye for a long time.
Well, yeah, I've been, I guess, blessed that people wanted. I mean, there's pluses and minuses, but overall, you feel you can make a contribution, you can make a difference, and they were different areas, but I think I made a difference as a judge and as a legislator.
I'm curious as to how have the boundaries of your district changed over the years. It's always been Spokane Valley, but it's expanded beyond that now.
Oh yeah, when I first ran in 81, we had Northeast Whitman County and had the little town of Malden that just had the horrific fire, and we had Southeast Spokane County. After that redistricting, we lost Southeast Spokane County, Northeast Whitman, and then later, 10 years later, lost Southeast Spokane. So it's changed, but yeah, the valley has always been a core, and it's gone up north. At one point, it went all the way to the Ponderay County line. Now it goes up to where Mount Spokane is, and north of that is the 7th, but Green Bluff and the Mount Spokane State Park, most of the park is in the 4th District.
So has it changed the way that the issues that you're paying attention to, anything you've had to add or subtract from that?
Well, when I first ran, I did not have much of a history in agriculture, but I was willing to learn. So I said, if elected, I will seek a seat on the House Agricultural Committee, which happened. And I did learn quite a bit about agriculture, and it, of course, still has a big impact on Spokane, even though Spokane County's agriculture is quite a bit less than it once was.
So you are the ranking member of the Law and Justice Committee, is that right?
I am now, right, in the Senate, yes.
And what other committees do you serve on?
I serve on transportation. I'm one of only two Eastern Washington senators on the Senate Transportation Committee. And then I'm on the Early Learning and K-12 Education Committee.
Great. Well, let's go to transportation for a minute. There's worry that the $30 car tab initiative is going to take money away from road projects, specifically the North-South Freeway. But you've got some pretty interesting road projects in the Spokane Valley as well. Are you worried that that is going to take money away from those railroad-related projects where the railroads and the roads meet?
Well, we've been fortunate. We've been able to work with the City of Liberty Lake, City of the Spokane Valley, and even Spokane County, along with the regional DOT administrator, Mike Ribner, and at least two phases of the project. The work is already started on the Barker interchange and on the Harvard Road interchange. But the most expensive part of the project, this is the Barker to Harvard project, is a crossover at Henry Road, which will help the new high school, Ridgeline High School, that Central Valley is building and is getting where it's almost done. And then they're on the north, that's on the south side of the freeway. On the north side of the freeway is Selkirk Middle School, which is already operational, subject to all the problems about COVID, but as far as the car tabs, most of that money really was scheduled for non-road projects. It's about $400 million. But having said that, there still is a major problem bigger than the car tabs. I mean, the car tabs went to the ferry and multimodal projects and not anything that would have directly impacted the North-South corridor. But the amount of revenue is down overall because people are traveling less. So that's more of a significant impact. I've long favored moving the sales tax money from automobile sales and auto parts sales from the general fund to transportation. I mean, I think they're directly tied into transportation. It makes more sense. And I think the general fund has been using transportation money for far too long. So that is a battle that would help tremendously on some of the projects that are needed and the maintenance. A lot of maintenance is needed for bridges and other parts, and they're having to cut back on the maintenance on some of the less traveled state highways.
So since the last time we talked, I think it was July, the revenue forecasts were pretty dire for the state, and maybe they're not quite so bad this time. But how do you go in January 2021? What's your approach to helping out to try to balance the budget next year?
Well, I think you've got to look at all the expenditures, and I definitely do not think taxes are an answer. We just heard officially yesterday that Boeing is moving the Dreamliner assembly operation from Everett to South Carolina. It's going to have a huge impact on jobs, especially in Snohomish County, but throughout the state, and it's going to have an impact on state revenue. And while we've had a comeback and the deficit, the most recent revenue forecast was half of what it was. It went from about $9 billion to around $4.5 billion. It's still, very unpredictable as to what it's going to be in January, other than there's going to be a deficit. What's been very unfortunate is the governor's, in my mind, obstinate refusal to call a special session to deal with this. And of course, there's two ways to call a special session. Either the governor can do it or two-thirds of the legislature can do it. All of the Republicans and the one conservative Democrat who caucused with us in the Senate have called for it. And all the Republicans in the House and a number of House Democrats have also called for the special session. But the Democrat leadership in the legislature, Senator Billig and Representative Jenkins, refuse. So I don't know. They're now talk of a special session in November after the election, which is pretty transparent that they don't want to solve the problem sooner. And they're concerned about, I think, what actions they would take and the impact it would have on the elections.
So what do you focus then a special session mostly on budget cutting? Or are there other things that you wanted to talk about during a special session?
Oh, there's a number of things to talk about. We have the transportation needs that you've mentioned. We have other legislation on criminal justice issues that we'll be dealing with. There's legislation that I think we could have some agreement on, and that was also one of the areas that probably would have been dealt with in a special session if it had been called. So, and of course, in education, we still have a real crisis with a lot of our daycare centers who have closed and been overregulated, especially the private daycare centers, and especially the religiously oriented daycare centers have had regulations imposed from Olympia that have been very burdensome. And so a number of those have closed throughout the state, and that is also a major problem. But there never is a lack of issues, and this is, of course, the longer session is scheduled for 105 days. We don't know, Doug, if it's how it's exactly going to be conducted with the virus and everything. I hope we can meet in person because, well, maybe committee meetings can be handled virtually. I think it's very difficult to deal with floor action when all the senators are together on the floor, all 49 of us. I think that'd be very difficult to do virtually.
So I know this is a hypothetical, but does to make the case for how much difference it makes if you meet in November versus January. It's only 2 months, but maybe you can make a stronger case for me for spending the extra money.
Right. Well, Doug, the original proposal that we had was to meet in June before the new fiscal year started. And and that would have been able to save all the new expenditures that were going to go into effect. Also could have dealt with some adjustments to the state employees negotiations that the governor had with them for their contract. But it could have saved us over $1 billion there. We do have some money in the rainy day fund, and I think we need to do things to spur the economy on. Governor Inslee's attack on Boeing for moving, I think, is the wrong approach, and I think we've got to have a more business friendly climate, or we're going to lose a lot of other businesses to states like Texas or Idaho or wherever.
Explain what business friendly means, because I hear so many people use that. What does it mean to you?
Well, it means to me, like take manufacturing, for example, which tied in with Boeing. So there was a special session. Boeing got a reduction in the manufacturing rate. And then later we had an agreement that all the other small businesses would also get a reduction in that tax rate for manufacturing. It passed the House and passed the Senate. And then the governor mysteriously vetoed it after his staff had said it was he'd agreed to it. And then that never had been reenacted. So what happens? The European Union comes after Boeing because they have a different rate. They said it would have been fine if they'd all been reduced or if they'd all been raised. So Boeing had to come in hurting as they are and ask that we raise the tax on them last session. I mean, things like that. There's administrative regulations that happen all the times. We tried to fix a problem with how the concrete pumpers were taxed last session and made a little progress, but didn't get a bill through. So you can go through a whole bunch of things. There's concern about our unemployment system and the costs there. So administrative law, there's a lot of reforms that could take place in administrative law that would streamline things and make it easier for everybody. So there's a whole bunch of areas, but there's a resistance. I've been trying to work on low-income housing and had a bill that would have said on a multi-use project, you would pay the prevailing wage on the residential part, the residential prevailing wage, and the prevailing wage on the commercial part, pay the commercial. But our law in this state says you pay the commercial, which is the higher rate, on the whole project. So it added about $500,000 on a project in Spokane. But that's just crazy, you know, and to my mind, a waste of money. But it has been opposed, you know, by some of organized labor. So there's things like that. Like to see a spur and make it easier for young couples to purchase entry-level condos and exempt some of the regulations that add a cost. I know that in Kendall Yards, they wanted to build some condos, the same unit, townhouse, condo. Condos, $200,000 more due to all the regulations. So we had a bill that would exempt six units and under from some of those regulations. There'd still be all the other building code regulations. So that's something I'm going to work on again. But there are a number of different things to try to spur the economy and help folks on housing and other issues.
Well, just to play devil's advocate, just for fun, when you talk about the prevailing wage and paying the one wage versus the higher wage versus the, I mean, doesn't that help the worker who's getting a little bit of extra money in their paycheck and has extra money to spend? I guess it's just who gets the money. Is the money going to the contractor? Is the money go to the guy who's doing the work?
Well, no, it's not really the contractor. It's the low-income renter that's going to have to pay higher rent because the cost of building the project is higher. And it makes no sense to charge a commercial rate on residential work. In addition, the prevailing wage is way above the market rate. I mean, I did some work up at, up at Mount Spokane on a lodge, I think the prevailing wage was near $40 an hour, whereas the market rate was more like 22 or 24. So for carpentry work. So, you know, it's I think most people see that that's not fair and adds cost. And it's not like you couldn't get workers to work at the prevailing wage for the proper classification.
So when you go to Olympia in January, assuming you're reelected, there are going to be a couple of areas where you're going to be asked to spend more money, I would assume, public health and wildfire prevention. Are those worthy of extra money in this sort of budget cutting mode?
Well, I mean, every expenditure you have to look at carefully, but the total budget has been $52 billion. So there's a lot of money. It's being spent. You got to establish the priorities, and you got to look at wasteful spending, such as $750,000 in the last budget to study taking down the dams on the Snake River, when that's not even a state decision; it's a federal decision. So, I mean, there's areas where you can look at, and there's priorities. Yeah, there's some areas that maybe we'll need an increase, some that you'll have to make reductions in. But overall, the budget continues to go up. I mean, if you had a provision, Doug, that would say we're limiting the growth of the budget to population and inflation, the combination of those two, it would grow about 6 or 7%. And we've been averaging double-digit growth ever since I've been back in the Senate.
So there's one other area, since you now have a district that has a bit of a rural component. What's your opinion about how the state has handled wolf interactions with livestock in northeastern Washington? Is the state shooting and killing wolves the right way to go?
Well, I think the wolves have killed a lot of cattle and other animals. So it's a reluctant decision, but it is something that I think needs to be done. I'm a little concerned that Governor Inslee is going the other way, and we certainly want to not needlessly kill wolves, but we also have to be concerned about the farmers and ranchers and the cattle that are being killed by the wolves. There are some things that can be done that are non-lethal things. And there's been a little bit of improvement in working with that, but the legislators from that area have been concerned about it, the number of wolves have grown. So when the state does that and they take a lethal action to remove the wolves, it's kind of a last ditch effort after trying a whole bunch of other things. So we can need to continue to work on it, and if we can find and continue to improve non-lethal ways, that's great, but I don't think that's going to be the answer in all cases.
If you permit me, I want to divert for a couple of minutes and go to sort of a non-election thing. I'm curious about, you spend anywhere from 2 to 4 months in Olympia your year as a legislator. What do you do the rest of the year as a legislator? What's sort of the arc of the job?
Well, it's amazing. We've spent a lot of time dealing with folks that have had problems getting their unemployment after the fiasco of the Nigerian scam, and then the department probably overly tight on things, and people that deserve unemployment not receiving it. Each case is worked individually, and we've worked on hundreds of cases, my office and other legislators throughout the state. So, I mean, that's just one example. I got a call last night from a King County councilwoman about a bill that passed dealing with that I sponsored that gave coroners the ability to subpoena certain records in lieu of calling an inquest. And it passed in 2019. Well, now the Department of Licensing is interpreting that they need to get a subpoena for them to identify bodies in the morgue that people don't know who they are. In the past, they could take a picture and they run it through a database and 5 to 10 minutes find out who that individual is, so they can notify the next of kin and everything else. So we're going to work on that. We're going to try to get the Department of Licensing to change their tune and continue the practice they've had, so we don't end up in some of our larger metropolitan counties with additional bodies in the morgue and what to do with them. But I mean, you never know what's going to come up or deal with. We had a meeting earlier this week with Spokane Valley city officials to talk about the Pines grade separation, which is the latest effort. The Barker grade separation is all completely funded and going through at Barker and Trent. And then this is one where they received some federal money and they're trying to get additional funding for the Pines grade separation, which is a very, very busy crossing. And there would be an underpass. And anyway, so that was explained, and we had a meeting about that. So there's things and groups that want to talk to you about all different aspects of state government. So you stay pretty busy, actually. Not the 110% busy that you are during session, but well over half of your time is spent on legislative matters, and we have a legislative aide, and I have an office, and people call, and they either want to meet with you or they have problems with state government that you're trying to solve, and that sometimes is the most rewarding part of the job. I remember years ago in the House, I helped a lady get an operation that saved her eyesight, so those are things where you can help people and make a difference.
So we'll finish by, I've been asking candidates, you are asking people for their vote, but when you've got the ballot in your hand and you're deciding how to vote, what are the qualities that you look for in candidates?
Well, I look at what their philosophy of government is. Are they generally somebody that wants to expand the role of government, or are they concerned about individual liberties, individual rights, and want to say, well, yeah, there are certain legitimate functions of government, but we got to be careful and careful on how it impacts individual rights. So that's one of the things. Of course, you want to also look, is the person competent? Can they do the job? Do they have a background, or do they care about people? I mean, you got to care about people in this job. And so those are some of the things that I look at.
So did anything that I missed during our time here that you wanted to make sure I knew about before we part?
Well, I mentioned it last time, but yeah, I've noticed since we last talked and we've got items on the November ballot, a lot of signs, at least in my district, I assume throughout Spokane County, urging people to reject referendum 90, which is on the ballot, and I was opposed by the Central Valley School Board, the West Valley School Board, and the Mead School Board, because it took away local control on a very sensitive subject of sex education. So I firmly opposed to that, helped lead the fight against the bill, 5395. But these referendums are always a little confusing to people. And if you supported 5395, you vote to approve referendum 90. If you're opposed to it, you vote to reject it, even though the folks had to get all these signatures to get it on the ballot. But anyway, that is a big issue, and I'm sure we'll get bigger here as we get closer to the election.